Interesting story. In the Old Testament, as far as I remember, there are two persons who was taken, written as taken up into heaven, or taken up. This is the second person. And the first person is Enoch, or Enoch, in the very early stage of time, even before Noah. This story, again, tells us many, many, many things in all details. Very interesting. One interesting thing that I'd like to share with you is that, isn't it somehow interesting that God is taking Elijah kind of in through outside, even over the Jordan? So he was actually outside the land of Canaan and was taken up. And that's where Elijah took his portion or his empowerment, succession to follow Elijah afterwards. So today I'd like to engage with all of you with this very interesting question. Probably I want to continue with this to the end of this year. I want to go kind of reading all this Acts and other books, and also following the first Christians and their history, and how they kind of happened, or were perceived, or they came into belief this new religion called Christianity. There are two aspects that is very important when you're believing something, anything. One, your own experience. If you have seen it, heard it, experienced it by yourself, you cannot really deny it. Well, some people still deny, but most of the times, for you, it feels real. Another way of hearing it is from another person, the one that who has seen, heard, experienced. Therefore, this person is telling you the story. And this time, it matters the integrity and your trust upon this person, how much you can believe the story that you're hearing. And most of us begin our journey as a Christians by the second, later experience. You get to hear these stories. They were written long time ago, and they are retold to you by Sunday school teachers, your mother, father, grandparents, uncles and aunts, and church people. Of course, yeah, minister too. Yet, does that something that really forms inside of you, something that we call faith? Or is there a component, element that happens in you as if you are actually experiencing God all new again? Therefore, you come into actual acknowledgement that I have seen, I have heard, I have experienced God, therefore I believe. So which one is you? You believe in God because you have heard and you're taught. You believe in God because you have seen, heard, experienced. It's not a test. You don't have to give me an answer for it. But please take a moment and think about it. That's my first talk. Well, today is one of those days that I wish I have an hour to talk, that I can fully explain and lay out all the reasonings and steps that why I am sharing certain points. But let's just, try to picture ourselves in this different time. And you are these disciples of Christ. This scene in the act, ascension, that was somewhat way the second big blow punch, proving that Jesus was indeed more than human. to the disciples. He was ascending into heaven. I mean, who would have done it? And who else saw it? Well, actually, nobody else. Not that many people actually saw this. And even till the last minute, the question to Jesus from the disciples is that, well, now you're resurrected, you got the more power than ever before. So disciples ask him, Lord, is this the time when you will restore the kingdom to Israel? And Jesus' answer is, actually, I don't know. And he is gone. So even to this moment, even to this point, as a Jew, as the Israelite, the expectation of disciples were that Jesus somehow will restore the kingdom to the Jews, defeating this Roman power and freeing them and giving them what the prophets promised in the old days. And suddenly, however, Jesus ascended and is disappeared into clouds. Wouldn't that be very shocking to you? It's an amazing scene to see that, wow, this our master actually ascends into heaven. That's, in one way, a big confirmation that Jesus indeed was and is more than just a human, but at the same time, he's gone. And he's not restoring the kingdom to Israel. And he's saying, the time and the period, I don't know. In the beginning of Christianity, the biggest struggle was about how to either separate or reconnect with this ancient Judaic prophecy and even the lineage that God was connecting through this people. And are Christians separate or not? For actually 150, almost 200 years, the first Christians also were Jews. And there was no clear distinction that Christians are not Judaism or Christianity is different religion. So in here, somehow Jesus, their master, ascend into heaven, and mysteriously this two men in white robe. Two men in white robe appears when? They appeared before in the Easter story with Mary and the tomb. You know, they told them that, you know, why are you looking for one who is already resurrected in the place of death? Some kind of that context, remember? Do you also see that they don't have wings? They are two men in white robe. Since when angels were having wings? Is that interesting? Is that really biblical or not? That's another debate you can have later. So in this story, it's very short but has very compact message, kind of plan or layout for the future of this new religion that's about to actually arise, called Christianity. And one of the biggest messages here is by those two men saying, he will come. And I need to check actually out. See, you read the Bible like so many times and then suddenly one day you realize you haven't really caught that one. In here, the two men doesn't say he will come back. They say he will come. There's a huge difference between he will come and he'll come back. Interesting, isn't it? And even after this, disciples actually go into their room and shut the doors, and they pray. They start to pray for the Pentecost, which I will be talking about next week. So, the promise of return. These people, these disciples, who has been called by Jesus in person, who has been taught by Jesus in person, blessed by Jesus in person, and saw this in person, you know what they believed? Jesus surely will return before they die. That was not just expectation. That was a concrete belief that they had. Including Peter and all other disciples. That's why they created a somewhat close to be communistic community. To enter it, you sell everything you have, your possession, and you give it to the community. And then you enter and you live together. You eat, sleep, live together in waiting for the return of their Lord. So somehow they felt that this Jesus is saying, I'll come back to you. To you means to you. And now, that was, 2,000 years ago, give or take, maybe 1,930 years ago, 1,940 years ago. We don't know exactly how long. So we know now that he didn't mean that. He didn't mean that I'll come, when he was saying I'll come to you, it doesn't mean come to them, these disciples. It means to humanity. That if that changes, then whole message of return could change too. And also we all know that Messiah was supposed to come to restore the kingdom to Israel. And Jesus was not really up to that. He was saying Messiah is kind of has come for whole humanity, not just for one people, one group of people. So there is this broadening way of message, which was not at all understood or accepted by the very first Christians. It took them a long time. It actually took them passing of the first disciples. After every single one of them passed away, yet the Lord hasn't come. So people gather again, and they thought, they discussed about it. Probably Jesus meant something else. You know what that discussion is? That is the first initiation of what we believe these days to be doctrines and theology. Doctrines and theology was born out of that broken expectation and coming back to deeper understanding of what he actually meant. So, when Jesus is saying, I'll come back to you, or I come to you, what does that mean to you? We have to have two meaning of it. One is to whole humanity, God to humans, salvation for whole humanity, which is universal, very, very novel and good thing. But how about if you personally don't have that connection and you feel life is gloomy and dark and there is nothing good about life, what does that really, salvation to humanity, really has weight and meaning to you? The message of Christ is actually always this kind of both layer. That one is to whole humanity, but also one is to the person, individual, who has connection to God, with God. So he was actually giving his disciples hopes and empowerment and visions and purpose. Yet at the same time, there is this whole another layer, depth, meaning for whole humanity. So, question to you, very challenging question. If you'd like to challenge any seminary and ask this question, are you still waiting for Jesus, or did your Jesus actually come to you? That's a very challenging question. It could create a long debate depending on which denomination you stand. But again, all theology, all doctrine kind of was born after they realized that their literal understanding of their master's message was all kind of gone into the air. That didn't happen that way. The biggest one was actually the promise of return to the disciples. Even Peter totally believed for a long time that his master will return with the heavenly army and restore the kingdom to them. Isn't that interesting? The way we read the gospel, the way we picture, the way we even kind of imagine these disciples may not be exactly how they were. That's what I'm trying to share with you. They were just like us in a way. Just busy and attached and involved in their very personal life. Very personal expectations, very personal wishes and hopes. I became father of 3 children, so I have experienced too that when my son was in the emergency room and getting the care, the whole joy in the world didn't matter to me. Didn't matter. When my wife was taken into the cesarean section in an emergency way because Roy's heart was kind of losing. And 7 doctors rushed in and they took her to the emergency operation. In that 10 minutes, I still remember, that was and still is the darkest moment in my entire life. I couldn't feel a thing. I couldn't even say a prayer. I thought, I'll lose them both. And whoa. So there is that we have our side taking in this global big theology, doctrine, and image of God that's not really personal. That's written in books and in discussions. But from my experience, what's really real actually is in here. And that moment, in that darkest way, I think I heard a small voice that everything will be okay. And it was okay. And it still is okay. So we have that limitation. That brings us in a humble humility and understanding approaching God. So my invitation to you all is to rethink about it. Your relationship with God, what you think God is, what you think you are, and maybe reach to the conclusion that what shall I do, what can I do, or what must I do to make this life right now more joyful, delightful, but at the same time sharing and serving, so kind and generous. In a way, your presence, if your presence, your life on earth make one spot in this earthly human community better, wouldn't that be worth it? After you're gone, because of you, a certain part of human community has become better. To me, that's second coming. Making humanity as a whole better and better and better. But how would that be possible without you and you and you actually accepting and living But how would that be possible without actually having joy? We still have joy? Joy, there's a joy sitting, but joy in your heart. Right? Joyful heart. How do you make your heart joyful? If you can't do that, who else can do it? So your prayer to God, my suggestion is, please let me have more joy. If I don't know about it, please teach me. You sometimes need to ask God to teach you. Because certain things God does not just command on you. Because God needs your open invitation. So may there be blessings upon your asking and receiving of God's blessing. Amen.
Amen.